Episode 166 von Win Today, Hockey, O'Clock, Brad McLean, Head Coach, Iowa Wilds, American Hockey League.
The American Hockey League's heart. Like, I'll give you an example. Last night, our team, we played in Chicago, the Chicago Wolves, 3 o'clock game. So we get on the bus. The bus left at 6:45. We bussed home, got home at 12 o'clock midnight. And we had to practice this morning at 11 a.m. after a 6-hour bus ride last night, because tomorrow we're getting on the bus to drive 8 hours to Grand Rapids. And we play in Grand Rapids on Wednesday. It's a very difficult, taxing league. You don't travel like the NHL in the charters. So for some players, it can be hard. They're just not able to bring it each and every night.
Win Today Hockey. O'Clock.
In diesem Augenblick wird's jetzt richtig hitzig. Yeah, und die Scheibe kollert über die Linie.
Mit Lippen drin statt nur der Ball.
Das ist unglaublich, was die vier zelebrieren.
It's been way too long. On episode 33 of Win Today Hockey O'Clock, he guested the first time. Now it's episode 166. It was about time to bring him back. He's become a head coach. Last time you heard from him, he was an assistant coach for the Minnesota Wild. Now he's the head coach of the American Hockey League's Iowa Wild. He's, of course, Brad McLean, and I'm so happy to have him back on Win Today Hockey O'Clock. Coach McLean, glad to have you here. You're in a car, so this will be interesting. Hope the phone's reception will keep this conversation going. Anyhow, so happy to have you back on Win Today Hockey O'Clock.
Oh, great to be back, Martin. Really good to talk to you. Good to see you again. And yeah, I apologize. There won't be much eye contact here on the Zoom, but we'll get through it.
See, the good thing is this is an audio-only conversation, so the video is just for us. So for the both of us, there's not going to be a lot of eye contact, but what goes out will be the audio feed, which has always been the case on this show. And there's so many things I'd like to talk to you about. The one thing is you're an incredibly busy man. I'd like to keep that this conversation within, let's say, an hour, maybe 50 minutes, knowing that there are tons of calls that you have to make. But I re-listened to our first conversation, and incredibly enough, it happened 3 years ago. The first three games of the kind of inaugural first and then again last NHL COVID season had just been played. You were an assistant on the Minnesota Wild. You're now head coach of the Iowa Wild, as I just mentioned. And 3 years ago, you talked a lot about process and how everything is part of the process, how everything is a process. How much does the word process still follow you around in your daily coaching affairs?
Yeah, it's even more so as a head coach, because obviously you have more on your plate, more to do every day. As an assistant coach, you more or less have your role and try to help the head coach and the team and the players in every way. And then obviously as a head coach, almost everything falls under your guidance and decision-making. And so process becomes even more important as far as decision-making and time management. It's a huge factor in what a head coach does.
Hopefully, during this conversation, we'll be able to dissect the word process a little more. But your career trajectory after you'd left Austria is so interesting, because you were a head coach for 3 years in the American Hockey League, then assistant coach, pardon me. Then you went to the National Hockey League as an assistant coach. Now you're back in the American Hockey League as a head coach. At what point did you personally feel, I'm ready for this role, I'm ready to become a head coach?
Well, I hadn't honestly even thought about it the last 3 years being an assistant in Minnesota. Enjoyed that job so much. Our staff with Dean Evason as the head coach was just, it was as good as it gets, to be honest. Just an unbelievable group of people. You know, Dean as head coach, Bob Woods as kind of the defensive assistant, Darby Hendrickson and myself, more with the forwards and as well as the video coaches, and Frederick Schwatt, another former Austrian, who played in the Austrian professional leagues, I believe in Vienna. So he was the goalie coach, still is. So our staff just worked so well together and our team did so well. It was just a great 3 years, and my family just loved it there. And then, so I hadn't even crossed my mind to be a head coach. And then after our season ended with Minnesota last year, Bill Guerin, the general manager of the Minnesota Wild, approached me and said that they'd relieved the current head coach of Iowa of his role, and that they would like me to take over the head coaching responsibilities in Iowa. Of course, I was flattered and honored, but it was not an easy decision on a whole bunch of levels. One being that I love my job so much in Minnesota and my role so much. However, after talking to my family for at least a month, we decided to accept the head coaching role. One reason being that obviously the excitement of the challenge of now being a head coach. And like I mentioned earlier, now everything kind of falls under your guidance and your decision-making process. There's a word again. The challenge of that became something we were very, very excited about. So we decided to accept the job.
Before we're going to talk about the challenge of being a head coach, did you ever talk back with the Wild and Honored Minnesota staff about like your Austrian ties? If you had to compile an all Ice League, all Able League, all Austrian experience kind of staff, having Hendrickson, having Chabot, having yourself on a staff would be coming very close to it. Did you ever kind of exchange your experiences in the Austrian League?
All the time. That's interesting. I forgot Darby. Yeah, I played in, I believe he won the championship in Salzburg as well. I forgot that he played there. No, we talked about it quite a bit, all the time. Yeah, and actually Bob Woods also played in Austria. He played in Vienna too. So there you go. So all four of us. How about that? Dean Evason didn't play in Austria, but I believe he played in Switzerland and Germany. But yeah, how about that? No, we talked about it quite a bit. And how much we all enjoyed our time and over there. And then obviously, like we've spoken about, I'm sure we will again. I such good friends with Phil Lucas and follow the Black Wings so closely that I would always give those guys the updates on the Austrian League. And so, no, we would quite often talk about our ties and our different experiences over in that great country.
It's interesting, and we'll eventually, hopefully, get to this during the course of our conversation, because having those international experiences as a hockey player and in what kind of shapes your coaching back in the minors in North America, hopefully we'll hit that talking point. But what I'm always wondering about, and I know the Iowa Wilds aren't in anywhere near where they probably want to be. I hate to call you bottom dwellers or cellar dwellers in the American Hockey League. You could argue that you're not, but I've always been wondering, what does success look like for a farm team? Where's the fine line between having sportive success and success in terms of developing talent?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's the age old question, coaching in the American Hockey League. And Bill Guerin and I talked about it at length when I accepted this role And so obviously we're not where we're at in the standings. And actually, we're talking about our coaching staff today at practice about our process, like our culture and our attitude every day at practice is so much fun. And we just have a blast, and the guys work hard, and the guys compete for each other. And we can see and they can feel the players, how much they're improving each day. So on that hand, it's a huge success this season. And our team, the way it's worked out, we've had huge injuries this year. Minnesota's had huge injuries. So basically our top five players, our top five veteran leader players, maybe five out of our top seven, we haven't had all season. So yes, you're not wrong. We're bottom dwellers. No, I'm not going to argue that, but it's also been very challenging to be anything but that. We won a game last Monday against Rockford and nothing against our players. They're playing fantastic. They're giving everything they have. They're completely committed to what we're doing, but their lineup versus our lineup was there's a big difference. And our guys played so hard and we won the game 3-1. And we were just so proud of our group. Now we played Rockford two more times that week and we weren't able to beat them those two games, which was tough. And it's tough to lose those games, but winning that one game was a big success. And again, to your point, our young prospects for the Minnesota Wild with us in Iowa are playing huge minutes, probably more than they should at this level, at where they're at in their trajectory and in their growth. And some games, it doesn't look so pretty, but they get to keep playing. And because of that, they're going to be so much further ahead in 1 year, in 2 years. So it's very hard going through it. It's very challenging as a coach going through it, not winning as many games as you'd like. And I don't know how success is gauged in the American Hockey League. All I know is that every day we show up and our players are improving and they're getting plenty of big minutes. And so they're going to be better for it in the long run.
We, of course, naturally stumbled upon an important word. It's culture. It's seemingly thrown around very loosely nowadays, but if you really narrow it down to the nitty gritty, it's so incredibly important. And I've talked to so many different head coaches at various levels, and all of them said there needs to be a certain culture. Now, as a head coach, a first-time head coach, you're kind of the tone setter. You're the one who tries to establish that culture. And I know you're an organization within an organization. It's the Minnesota Wild, it's the Iowa Wild, it's the Iowa Heartlanders. But as far as you're concerned, how does implementing a culture look like? How did you try to tackle that kind of problem?
Yeah, it's been a big thing for us this year. So a few levels of it is obviously you need, coaches can say as much as they want, but what the players are saying in the locker room is the most important. So as a head coach, you set it, you set your standards, and you have to hold firm to it. You have to hold true to it. But the next level of that, layer of that, is the leaders in your locker room. And I mentioned to you that we named our captain for this season, Dakota Mermis. The next day he got called up to Minnesota. He's played five games for us all season. So it's really hard. And I mentioned earlier how we've had, you know, five basically of our top seven leaders have been up or injured for almost all this season. It makes it hard when you don't have those people in your locker room each and every day, or even for the majority of the days. So what we've done is just make sure that every day, even if it was some tough losses, there's a real positive tone and there's a real sense that everybody's getting better each day. We've really focused on that. We've also focused on it, making sure that coming to work for the Iowa Wild, coming to play for the Iowa Wild each day is a fun place to come to. We do so many team building events, at least one per month, outside of the rink. whether it's going to play mini golf and bowling together, or it's we did a wiffle ball day where we had a tournament and we did things like that, whether it's going for team dinners for the Masters golf tournament coming up. We're going to have a they do the par three day on the Wednesday. We're going to do a whole setup, a little mini golf setup in our locker room that day with all of the guys, and really have a fun day while we watch that par three competition at the Masters golf tournament. So things like that, to make sure we just almost kind of double down on that, making sure that it's a great place to come to work to every day. That means we're working hard every day and we're getting better every day, but it's also a fun place to come to because it just has to be that. It can't look like a dog days of winter type of thing each and every day, especially when we don't have a ton of veteran players, especially when we are unfortunately losing more than we're winning. Obviously, we hope to change that here for the rest of the season, but making sure it's a really good place to be each and every day, and an environment players can come to, especially young players, and be excited about and be looking forward to getting better.
Great that you mentioned the many team building events that you're having. Who's coming up with the ideas for that? Is it you? Is it a group effort within the coaching staff? Who comes up with the ideas?
Well, it's a group effort. Everything's a group effort with our coaching staff, and we make sure everybody's involved in all of those decisions. However, I really enjoy putting on those type of things. So I'd have to be honest and say that I definitely spearhead those because I just think they're so very, very important and they're a lot of fun. And we're playing or coaching hockey every day. We're really lucky to do that. So yeah, I think it's just so very, very important to what we do each and every day.
You've already alluded to one of the more interesting parts of the American Hockey League. Of course, you're trying to have success on the ice, win as many games as possible. Then again, it's your other main job to develop talent. And as a writer over at The Athletic, he's named Scott Weir. For all the listeners out there who don't know him, he's always got an eye for talent. He's writing a lot about hockey talent, and he's always coming up with the prospect pool ranking. So basically, he takes all the 32 organizations and ranks them as regards the prospect pipeline, for the lack of a better word. And last year, the Minnesota Wild were first in his rankings. This year, they're down to 10, which is still really good, up a third of the National Hockey League. And it's probably also a reason because Marco Rossi, quote-unquote, graduated to the National Hockey League. But I want to quickly read something from Scott Wheeler's prospect pool rankings this year. He writes, Jesper Wallstedt, his first NHL start didn't go the way I'm sure he wanted it to, and he's had a couple of games like that this season where he has looked, really for the first time in his career, a little human, as opposed to the robot he has looked like in the past. His body of work and games still combine to make him arguably the best goalie prospect in a sport for me, though, and it's also important to contextualize him against his team in Iowa, which is one of the worst teams in the American Hockey League. We're back to square one. Not a lot of sport is success, but you have Jesper Wallstedt at your disposal. I've read a lot about him. I heard a lot about him. How is it to coach this incredibly coaching talent? And what? And I know with goalies, it's so hard to project, but Let me hear you talk about his ceiling.
Well, that's, yeah, and obviously you get asked about Jesper a lot. And the number one thing I'd say, so you ask about his ceiling. So I'll answer that first. I think the sky's the limit. There's probably not much of a ceiling for him because just the, you know, the way he plays, the calmness he plays in the net, how big he is, yeah, there's the sky's the limit for Jesper. The big thing I always say is that he's still 21 years old. And that's probably where, you know, people get, they rightfully so, should be so excited about where Jesper is going, but he's still only 21. And so even though he's played 2 years in Sweden's highest league in pro, and he's now, this is second year pro. So he's played 4 years of pro hockey, which is incredible for a 21-year-old, right? He is still only 21. So making your first National League start is a big deal. And I'm sure is a huge deal. And I'm sure some of those goals he'd want back, but in that start, but he's so easy to coach. What I really like about Jesper and stood out to me is we all know about goalies. We all know the stigma. And usually goalies, then you combine European goalies in North America. They're maybe not as comfortable in living in the USA. And then you can find the fact that he's a young goalie. Yet the best thing about him is that he's a huge part of our team. And quite often goalies, and again, young goalies, they just do their own thing and they're very quiet, but he's not. He's one of our leaders. He's a huge part of everything we do each and every day in practice. The guys score on him. They're going at him, bantering at him. He's going back at the guys, which you don't see with a lot of goalies, again, especially young goalies. So it just, that's one thing I've loved and surprised me about Jesper is how much he already is integrated into a part of the team and how he's a leader already at such a young age. And that's been really nice to learn about him. Easy to coach, holds himself accountable, loves it when we have hard practices, loves it when we have hard days, because he says we need that and we need to continue to get better like that. So been a real pleasure working with him this year.
You touched on an interesting point, knowing that you're from Western Canada, British Columbia, the Kelowna region originally. Living overseas as a European and then touching down in Iowa, of all places, in Des Moines, where the Iowa Wild are located, what's been maybe the hardest for you, and what do you think is the hardest for European players to kind of acclimatize to in Iowa?
Yeah, it's another good question. You know, as far as European players acclimatizing to Iowa, I would think, obviously, you know, especially Swedish players, Jesper, for example, they all speak English so well that probably helps. I would think that for European players in Iowa, what would be odd would be that our team is popular and is well known, and we get really good numbers of fans to our games. But around the city, it's not like there's hockey fans. And, you know, if you go around Linz, for example, there's hockey fans everywhere. They know how the Black Wings are doing. Yeah, obviously, in Sweden, it's a huge hockey country. So I would think that would be a bit different for them, in that it's certainly not hockey country. You don't really see it much on TV. You don't see it much around town, even though the games are well attended. That would be an adjustment for sure for European players coming over to Des Moines specifically.
And of course, there's the big sports team in Iowa. That's Iowa Hawkeyes, even though they're located in Iowa City. But college football, is it fair to assess that college football is the most dominant sport in the state of Iowa?
Yep, college football is king, no question, in Iowa. And then college sports just in general is big. Basketball is big. Wrestling is really big in Iowa, a huge sport. So yeah, college sports in general kind of rules it.
See, this is the great thing about this podcast. We'll try to not only educate people, but obviously broaden their horizons this time around on the great state of Iowa. Got a couple more questions as regards the prospects and the prospect pipeline. What are the prospects that just graduated and moved on to the National Hockey League? Of course, Austria's very own Marco Rossi. Last time around, we were talking about his potential. He had to come all the way back from basically long COVID and everything that haunted him, had to pay his dues in the American Hockey League. Now he's among the top rookies of the National Hockey League. How did you... I mean, you were kind of directly involved, but how did you follow his development? How's your assessment of what he's doing right now and everything that he's gone through?
Yeah, it's obviously fantastic what he's done this season. I know a bit of a change he made last summer was he spent most of the summer in Minnesota working with our skating coach, working with our strength coach. And I think it really helped him because one reason being, and no, that's not a knock on anybody he was working with before or what he was doing before. Marco's one of the hardest workers you'll ever find in pro sports. But I do think that, so every day he was skating with National Hockey League players in the summer. And so even if they're playing a small area game in the summer, doing it against National Hockey League players is different than doing it against any other type of player. You just have less time and space. You've got to think quicker. So I really think that helped Marco. And yeah, he missed an entire season of hockey as a 19-year-old. I think we see it now, but it's hard to assess how much that can affect someone's development. That's such a huge year in a player's development. Obviously, he needed 2 years to get back kind of on the path that he would have liked to get on and that the team would have liked to get on. And then he had that great summer and he's just been fantastic all season, really. It's just been great to watch. And just as, you know, his hockey mind is so elite offensively. And now he's got, you know, he's able to create time and space for himself. And his vision is so good. And he's getting to the net, scoring goals in all different ways. It's been so big for him, so big for the Wild, obviously. There's a reason why this Wild team is doing so well. Marco's a big part of it. Now having that strength at the center position with Juul Eriksson-Ek having the incredible season he's having and becoming that number one center that you know the Wild have coveted for so long. Marco is just doing such a great job in his role. Ryan Hartman, Freddie Goudreau as well. Now you've got four great centermen, which every team needs as a backbone. And then the other factor would be Brock Faber and his emergence. I think you mentioned earlier how the Wild's prospect pool ranking, you know, dropped. Well, the two top prospects, Marco Rossi and Brock Faber, have now made the National Hockey League. So obviously your ranking is going to take a hit when that happens. And Brock Faber has become a number one defenseman, which everyone knew he would be good. But to be able to step in and play 25 minutes a game and quarterback the top power play unit and be the top penalty kill is just incredible what he's doing. So real exciting times for the Minnesota Wild.
Bigger mission, obviously, leaving or haven't even mentioned Brock Faber's name to this point. Glad you did. Two big prospects that left the Iowa Wild and are obviously in the running for Calder Trophy if they were in a certain Connor Bedard, but that's a topic for another day. The one question I've asked myself, and you've already talked a little bit about Marco's trajectory, is everybody knew that he got the potential for the National Hockey League. But then he had his debut in the National Hockey League, the two games that he played. We were lucky enough to have the National Hockey League broadcasting rights at exactly the right time to be able to cover his debut against the Boston Bruins. But then he got sent back to the American Hockey League and he played there for another 2 years, had another call-up, was again sent down. But at what point did you... And I know there are so many people within an organization constantly assessing the players and the potential that they have, but at what point were you yourself certain that this would be, or that he now has it to be a permanent National Hockey League player? Was there ever a point?
Well, it wasn't until this year, I'll be honest. You know, he wasn't able to find his game at the National Hockey League yet before this season. So I'd say I can't remember the exact game, but it was probably... I guess it was when when John Hines took over for the Wild, he asked me to come up to their first game and to go to their first practice that he was the head coach this year, because just so I could get to know how he does things, so we could, you know, translate it to Iowa. And in watching that game with Marco there, I knew he was there. He was going to be there to make the impact that we all hoped that he would have for years to come. It was a different player that we'd seen in years past. Again, I mentioned earlier, just being able to, he got two partial breakaways that game where he was able to separate in the neutral zone from National Hockey League players and get partial breakaways, and the way he was creating space for himself, and also the way he was playing very well defensively, really well. It was just, he was there now, and he was going to be able to really make an impact in the National Hockey League. So it was fun to see.
The interesting thing is you've been through that ringer too. You played in the National Hockey League. You played in the American Hockey League. At one point, you moved over to Europe, enjoyed a very successful career there too. So the American Hockey League, and that's me talking from the outside, looking in, seems like not that you're stuck in the middle of nowhere, but if you're not moving up to the top level, and if you don't want to move down to the East Coast Hockey League, there might be a career in Europe waiting for you. But how do you deal with talent that maybe hasn't got it or doesn't develop, quote unquote, it the way Marco Rossi did? Do you recommend looking into a career in Europe, or how does it work?
Yeah, it's
a loaded question.
Every situation is unique, right? So, the way it works in the American Hockey League is we can have six veteran players. That's they start the season with over 320 games played. So that's, basically four or five seasons, pretty much, with the number of games we play over here. So about five seasons. So they all kind of get paid very well and do very, very well. So those are really good jobs, really coveted jobs. But as you mentioned, it's unique too, because sometimes a young prospect, you might be playing with a young prospect that's maybe not ready to be playing on the top line with you, but he needs to get those minutes. So it's a unique personality and a unique person that's able to play in the American Hockey League, because they're so important, because we go back to that word culture. They have to be accepting to be in the National Hockey League, but you want them to, or in the American Hockey League, but they have to be continuing to want to strive to get to the NHL too. You want them to still have ambition, but they still have to not be grumpy, so to speak, if they're in the American Hockey League, and they have to be all into what we're doing in the American Hockey League, and they have to be willing to really help out those young players. So not everybody's cut out for that. So if it's somebody that's not like that, that's maybe a little bit older, then they should definitely go to Europe, because it's such a fantastic experience and the leagues are so great, and it's such a great opportunity on so many levels, hockey-wise and lifestyle-wise. So definitely. And then you've got maybe the younger players, like you said, that maybe had their two or three years as a prospect, quote-unquote prospect, didn't develop the way they wanted. Now some of them can continue to try to maybe play in the American Hockey League and only play in the American Hockey League on AHL contracts and try to play there. And that's a good thing too. Or they can go take their shot in Europe. So everybody's unique, but whether it's a job in the American Hockey League or a job in Europe, you're lucky to be playing hockey and they're all fantastic. And everyone comes with the challenges, but everyone comes with a whole bunch more fantastic opportunities, and there's so many more pluses than there are negatives to it, that's for sure, wherever you're playing hockey.
That is indeed a great way to put it, but just trying to think of a conversation that you might be having with another player or a player on your team, what kind of makes your spidey senses tingle, just judging from your own career trajectory, what are certain clues where you know this player probably could be better off in Europe than with us right here in the American Hockey League, or maybe with us here in North America.
Yeah. I think obviously if it's the American Hockey League's heart, like I'll give you an example. We played in last night, our team, we played in Chicago. It's Chicago Wolves, 3 o'clock game. So we get on the bus. The bus left at 6:45. We bussed home, got home at 12 o'clock midnight. And we had to practice this morning at 11 a.m. after a 6-hour bus ride last night, because tomorrow we're getting on the bus to drive 8 hours to Grand Rapids. So, and we play in Grand Rapids on Wednesday. It's a very difficult, taxing league. You don't travel like the NHL in the charters. So for some players, it can be hard. They're just not able to bring it each and every night because it is challenging. And so if a player is inconsistent, maybe getting frustrated with the travel, maybe things like that, then definitely it's somebody that should probably go to Europe and try that out. And so that's a good situation for them. But also I would always talk to them and say, hey, listen, in Europe, things are fantastic and great, but it's going to be different there too. And there's going to be challenges in the lifestyle away from the rink. Again, you don't speak the language. Everything is done a bit differently over there, and you've got to be able to embrace that. So, there's obviously, again, multiple facets to it and to somebody making that decision. And even to the way I would recommend it to them, make sure whatever I say to players is you got to be all in whatever you're doing. If you're in the American Hockey League, you're all in. If you're in Europe, you got to be all in. And things are just done a little bit differently there. And you've got to be able to roll with the punches and the different challenges. So, but whatever you're doing, make sure you're all in when you're doing it.
Great that you mentioned the bus rides, because that's probably one of the main reasons you spent all but 2 years in Switzerland, where the longest bus ride is 4.5 hours. If you tell that to your players, what would their facial expression be like?
Yeah, they like that. I tell them in Switzerland how you, even in Linz, I think the most we ever spent in a hotel was like 4 nights or something like that in a season. And they just, they can't believe it. Yeah, on that. So it's very, very nice. It's a very good situation. And so they would enjoy the sound of that.
Got a couple more questions before we round out this conversation, Ian. Concerning your special teams, and you've already talked about the players moving on, the players being called up, you having to deal with so many different faces and obviously players on your team. Your power play as of right now sits at 16.7%. Your PK sits at 71.9%. Both numbers with room for improvement, I'd say. You might have the best scheme in the world as regards both of the special team units. If you don't have the players, obviously a problem. You might have the best players. If you don't have the scheme, it's the other way around. So, knowing that you had to, that it was kind of a revolving door as a talent level goes, how does the scheme, or does the scheme have to evolve every time with new players, or is there something set in stone that everyone can prepare for? How does it work with, again, a revolving door of talent?
It's been for sure challenging, and as a coach, you take great pride in the special team. So it's hard. So our play kill scheme 3 times this year, trying to find one that works. We're our team. We've really kind of tried to simplify things. And I guess with so many, such a revolving door this year, one thing we've done is really simplify things on both power play and penalty kill. And very, very simple. And, we've got our principles and try to get the most out of it that we can, and really try to excel whenever we can. And so, been another challenging part of it for sure. I would never look at that partly because it's player driven, maybe, but as a coach, we're always going to say first that it's accountable to us and we need to do better in that area. So, but as far as the revolving scheme or evolving scheme, definitely our schemes have evolved greatly this year. Because they have to evolve with talent. They have to evolve with the type of talent you have. And so, it's always something we're evaluating. However, you also don't want to change it too much and make it so there's no foundation and basis. So, you know, we tried to really put a foundation in, and our power play scored goals each of the last two games. So we're excited about that. Unfortunately, the penalty kill hasn't been great the last couple of games, and we'll keep evaluating it, tweaking it, without losing our principles and our foundation.
The one thing I want to talk about is the permeability, like players moving up and down all the way. There's another level with another team involved. It's the East Coast Hockey League's Iowa Heartlanders with another interesting person as a head coach, Derek Damon. He used to play in the Austrian League too. How does this permeability look like? How often you guys have a kind of group call or group Zoom, John Hines, Bulgarian powers that be, yourself and all the people that make the Iowa Wild work, and then the Iowa Heartlanders with Derek Damon and his staff. How does one have to think about this?
Yeah, no, and it's we don't everyone get on a call very often. That's pretty rare. We'll do it in the summer. You know, meet at development camp and prospect camp and main training camp. We will. Everyone will be together. All the coaches will be together separately. Everyone will be together. But, you know, we're talking quite a bit. I talk to Derek Damon at least once a week, update on players and whatnot. Don't talk to John Hines as much, but still very much open line of communication. But, you know, we have a general manager, Mike Murray, in Iowa, who's in Minnesota quite a lot, more than 50% of the time with the big club. So there's always a pipeline that way. He also deals with the Heartlanders, so he kind of is a conduit that way. We also have our development staff headed by Brad Bombardier, who their role really is dealing with these individual players and prospects and getting them from draft picks to the National Hockey League. So they're always coming through. We're always communicating with them. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily a set time that we talk, but the lines of communication are every day, and everyone kind of knows their roles, and everyone is up to speed with what the other departments are doing. The other thing we do is once a month, I talk with all of our pro scouts and give them an update. So we have four scouts that their job is to scout all the professional hockey players in North America. And then they go to Europe a few times a year as well to scout prospective players there. And so I talk with them once a month, all of them, and give them an update on our players here in Iowa. So they know where these players are at and kind of what to possibly look for if we're looking for trades, if we're looking to into the future as well.
The American Hockey League is so interesting because obviously there's a great influx of AHL talent over here in Austria. As of lately, it's been more ECHL players who've not flooded the league, but who've found success in this league. And then again, when it comes to coaches, there's obviously a pipeline back to the American Hockey League. Just this past year, we had Matt McIlvain go back to North America and coach the San Diego Seagulls. He of two straight championships here in Austria. Jessica Campo, a couple years ago, spent a coaching internship with Tom Rowe in Nuremberg. She's now one of the very few female assistant coaches in all of hockey. She's with the Coachella Valley Firebirds. And I know your time as a head coach is limited. You have to focus on everything that's going on with your team, within the organization. But how much do you focus on everything that happens with other coaching jobs in the league?
I'll be honest, not too much. Not very much. During the summer, I'll focus on that. Not focus, but follow it, I would say. But during the season, it's all about our team. And like we've talked about it, I'm not shying away from it. It's been a challenging year results-wise. Special teams challenging, everything. It hasn't been an easy year coaching. And so all of my professional focus has been on the Iowa Wild and the Wild organization this season to do the best we can by our prospects and by our team and to make sure that even though, hopefully the wins are going to come these last 21 games and we're getting to the playoffs, but even if they don't, that our prospects are getting what they need to get to where we want them to go to as an organization.
I totally understand that you can't focus a whole lot on other things, but I'm very sure that you're trying to follow the trajectory of your very good friend Phil Lucas. He's now in his second year with the Black Wings Linz, the program you both played for at the tail end of your career. He's brought him back to not only credibility, but he's also made him competitive again. He's now in the playoffs for the second year in a row. How would you assess his coaching job from afar?
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, I'm honestly getting chills just thinking about it. I think so highly of Phil. He's such an unbelievable human and he cares so much about everybody that he comes in contact with. Great father, great husband, obviously, first and foremost. And he cares about the Black Wings, cares about the city of Linz. There's nobody better to be that head coach there. He was made for the job and I followed it. That's the one thing I followed extremely closely. I know the leagues, they don't always play Friday, Sunday, but quite often the games are Friday, Sunday. So I'm always checking the scores those nights and to finish in the top six and for the building to be full again. And to be rocking again, it's the unique, fantastic thing about the Black Wings, right? That full building each and every game is what I remember from my time there and those great fans. And for Phil to have reinvigorated that fan base and have the team playing so well and kind of rebuilt that program is just, it's not surprising, but it's just awesome. And to do it in 2 years as a head coach is just really, really special. So, yeah, very happy for him, proud of him. And we text, geez, a couple times a week and talk as much as we can. It makes me very happy for a really good friend.
See, the great thing about you two is the first part of your answer, you could have taken exactly that, put it in Phil's mouth, and it would have sounded, or he would have sounded the same when talking about you. So I guess this is way more than a friendship. Two like-minded people who are great at coaching hockey. We indeed did it. We stayed within 50 minutes. I don't want to rob too much of your time. Just hoping that the three-game losing streak that you're on right now will eventually end. I promise you one thing. It won't take another 133 episodes to have you back here on Winter Day Hockey O'Clock. So thankful for doing this. We'll follow the Iowa Wild closely. We'll follow the graduation of talent towards the Minnesota Wild very closely, and hopefully have you back hopefully very soon here on Winter Day Hockey O'Clock. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you very much. Absolutely my pleasure. Anytime. See you, buddy.
Winter Day Hockey O'Clock.
Kurz durchatmen bei diesem Wahnsinn. Und das ging rasend schnell. Der Traum vom Finale ist erfüllt. Mittendrin statt nur dabei.
Mit Fans, stimmungsvoll und hoffnungsfroh.
Nice move. Another nice move. Oh, he scored!